Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. All right, welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in today. Today's a really special day for Elizabeth and I, and it's special for a handful of reasons. But one of the main reasons is because we have Gaetano and Abby Haudegui on the show, and I'm saying your last name wrong, so Gaetano, please correct me. It is
Haudegui.
There you go. And
I still can't spell it, and I've known you since I was 14.
That's a great segue. So we have some guests on the show today. Before we get into it, I just want to say thank you to everybody who has rated and subscribed and left a comment. Thank you so much. Algorithms are a real thing and we don't get to control them, but you can help contribute by just giving a thumbs up or leaving a comment or subscribing. So when new content comes, if you at all want to watch this, you can head over to YouTube. We have that as an option now too, and you can check that out. You can see these wonderful folks, so good looking, such a handsome couple. Mm-hmm. That was an old phrase, a handsome couple.
Right. Used,
mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. But it's true. So this is special for lots of reasons. Elizabeth just said, I've known you since I'm 14. Why don't you start there? Why don't you start with when you first met these guys and then how we're all connected, and then we'll have an official time for you guys to jump in. Does that sound okay?
Sounds perfect. Great.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I've first met you guys maybe a few months after John Mark, my oldest brother, started telling the family about this girl that he was madly in love with. Mm-hmm. And they had started dating. And I think we were just visiting. You guys lived in Medford, uh-huh. Like 4 hours from Portland. And we were just visiting and either stayed at your parents' house, Tano, or maybe just came over or something. And I think you guys were dating, maybe engaged.
Yep, probably.
And I feel like you guys were only there for like a few minutes. Total hippies at the time. Mm-hmm. Very true. I was 14. And then I just remember like you guys being there. We eventually moved there. I remember mm-hmm. you guys being there every once in a while. And then I remember going to your wedding.
Yeah.
I remember John Mark did marry the girl he was madly in love with. Yeah. I remember you being incredibly pregnant at their wedding.
Yep.
Come to find out later in labor at uh-huh. their wedding.
Yep. I didn't know this part of the story.
Birth the next day.
Yeah.
June 17th.
Yeah.
Maybe it's important to highlight that girl is Gaetano's sister and their, yep. which is your younger sister.
Important detail.
Yeah. Important detail. And so what's really fun. So
we're in-laws, sort of.
We're family.
We share nieces and nephews.
Yes, we do. But we also share friendship, which is great.
Totally. Yeah,
and absolutely. Relationship. And they also live literally one block from us.
Yeah.
We all live within so one special. Block from each other. So that's really sweet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But welcome to the show, you guys. Yeah. We're so
Thank
glad
you.
To have you.
Thank
on.
You for having
we're
us.
We're so glad to be here.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming. It was a long drive to get here.
It was a walk, actually.
Did you guys walk?
One block.
Yeah, we
it's
walked.
A good day to walk. Yeah. It's very nice here today in Bend, where we're at. But today we have been wanting to have you guys on for a long time, and there's a lot of reasons to that. And why we say today is special is because really for anyone listening or watching, you're just going to be listening or watching some deep history and some just real honest truth around suffering and all sorts of levels. And Elizabeth and I have experienced, as we've shared in different capacities in this space and others, different levels of suffering that we obviously would have never chosen. Yeah. But truly, it just, we all know it's never helpful to compare suffering, right? Like your suffering is this bad versus this. But at the very same time, there's different kinds of loss. There's momentary loss, there's catastrophic loss, there's different kinds of loss. And you guys have gone through just all of the worst kinds of loss and suffering mm-hmm. that you can. Mm-hmm. You're still sitting next to each other. Yeah. You still have smiles on your faces. And you have an incredible story. And so why we really wanted to talk with you is because we think you have so much to offer as insight and perspective, not only just your story, but also just how God and your choices together, you know, you partnering with the Holy Spirit to decide to walk with him through all this. And we just know that if you are tuning in today, you will want to listen through this whole thing. If you can't, just pause and come back to it. Because not only is your story powerful, but I think God has a lot for people mm-hmm. that are willing to tune in. So before I ask you for your story, Elizabeth, am I missing anything?
I just want to read a scripture that I think sums up why we wanted you guys to share your story. You know, it's the verse we've all heard so many times. 2 Corinthians 1:3 says, "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God." Mm. And I know from watching your life over the last, how many years have you guys been married?
24.
Yeah. So over the last 25 years. Yeah.
Shoot. Yeah, buddy. How old were you guys when you got married?
10. 20.
The older lady. That's fine.
But just watching your life for that long, watching all the loss that you guys have experienced in those 25 years, and the way that God has comforted you, and the way that you now comfort others with that same comfort. And I love that the scripture says that God comforts us in all of our troubles so that we can comfort others in any trouble. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the beautiful thing that God does in suffering, is connecting us in our shared sufferings, even if our suffering is not identical. Mm-hmm. So for anybody listening, you might not relate to their specific loss, but anybody can relate to loss in some form mm-hmm. and suffering in some form. And if you haven't had a great loss yet, I think that's the time to hear stories like this. We need to hear stories like yours all the time. But I think even just keeping stories like yours fresh in our hearts makes suffering, I don't want to say easier, but a little more palpable when we've heard stories of people where God has remained faithful, where they've been through the darkest of the darkest things and let God do a great work in them. Like, we need to hear those stories all the time. So I'm so grateful that you guys are willing to share your story. And I just feel honored to get to be in the room.
Yes. And I will just say, we'll stop talking. We just wanted to set that up.
Yeah.
But really, we just want to, I think the thing, just to reiterate, thank you. Thank you guys for being willing. So with that, I just love, wherever you want to start us with your story. I mean, obviously you guys met somewhere. Give us maybe a little background of the romantic history / crazy dating experience. And then Ellie was your first one.
She was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So take us.
Do you want me to start?
Sure.
Okay. So my name is Gaetano. I grew up in the Bay Area as a kid in Pacifica, California, and moved to Southern Oregon when I was 9 years old. I grew up in Southern Oregon and did high school and everything there. And I met my beautiful wife. We were both kind of doing a lot of partying and kind of living a little bit crazy.
I heard some stories from that before.
Yeah.
Crazy times.
So we met each other at a reggae festival in Yuba City, Marysville, California. And we connected at that point and became great friends, dated for a while, but then really started changing our lives in that same frame at the same time when we were late teenagers, early, kind of like 17, 18, 19. Mm. And we got married and started our crazy venture together. I was 20. She was 21.
Oh, like 18.
And that's where we got. That's when we started.
So you guys were. We were 21 when we got married as well. Yeah. I forget about that. That's right.
I was 21.
Yeah, that was in 2000.
We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying. Honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me," God says, "and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you. So this is your version. What's your version of this story?
Yeah, it's very similar. I mean, we were living a not like super worldly lifestyle, but we were trying to get our like faith back on track. Hmm. And we had met each other in just the right time, but we dated for a little while, then we broke up.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. things were just moving super fast and we were used to the worldly style. So we broke up and he went to the school ministry, which is where mm-hmm. he met John Mark. And so that's kind of where that situation started.
Weird world.
And then once he came back and we both had had some maturing times, totally walked away from the Lord, or totally walked with the Lord and walked away from the world. Hmm. Then we like had something to build our relationship on. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and then we were married. And
we fell in love big time, though, for sure.
Yeah,
100%.
I think that's when I had like, met right? you. Is when yeah. you guys had. I think you had recently gotten back together or something.
Yes. Yeah. And then after we were married, it was 9 months, and then we got pregnant with our first child, Eliana. Mm. And yes, I was in labor at John Mark and Tammy's wedding.
Yeah,
had a baby the next day. And that was our sweet little Ellie. And we were so excited, as all parents are, with their mm-hmm. first baby. Like, she was such a gift. And we were brand new parents. So when we had her, we were just overjoyed. And we didn't have any idea what our life was going to look like as she got a little bit bigger. We were just, you know, new parents. So mm-hmm. we thought she was perfect. Mm. But so goes the story, is she actually did have a lot of issues. And yeah.
Okay. So tell us about Ellie, you know, as far as her issues go. So what was that journey? She was born. When did you start to discover what was going on with her, and maybe what was some of those things for those listening?
Yeah. She was born fairly normal, but she had very low tone.
Yeah.
So she had a lot of issues feeding right out of the gate. I wasn't aware of that because this was my first baby, but I kept taking her back to the doctor and they kept saying she has failure to thrive. And I'm like, oh gosh, like it's the most horrible term a mom can hear is your child is not thriving. You know, it was like heartbreaking to hear that. Mm. So we tried all the interventions we could, and we finally, you know, about 9 months, she would sit up on the floor and then she would like grab a toy like normal kids do. And then she would just fall over and drop the toy. Mm. And we were like, okay, something's not right. So we ended up at a panel of doctors in Portland, and they were doing all kinds of testing on her, neurological testing, occupational testing, everything they could, you know, do to kind of get an answer for us. And her first diagnosis was cerebral palsy.
Mm. And how old was she then? She was like 15 months, right?
Just before 15 months. And at that point, she was so tiny. She was only, I think she was like 14 pounds. And so we ended up having to get a G-tube placed. And I was already pregnant with my second child at that point, Titus.
Wow.
And we did finally get a diagnosis called Rett syndrome. And so,
I remember when you guys got that diagnosis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that before or after we talked to the neurologist?
So we got the diagnosis of Rett syndrome. And at that time, there's no internet. So you don't get to just go and look up everything. Or if it was, there was internet, it was so new. You didn't just get to go and research everything like you do these days.
And Rett's is rare.
Rett's is very rare.
And it's pretty disabling.
Yeah.
So
incredibly disabling. Yeah. We ended up going to a neurologist, not really knowing what our predicament was or what her future looked like. And he basically said, so you guys know, like, she's going to be extremely disabled and completely handicapped the rest of her life. And like, we both looked at each other and we were like, no, we actually didn't hear that. And so it like struck us like a ton of bricks, and we realized that our life was going to change pretty dramatically. And when we were already pregnant with our second child, so it was like, I was almost thankful that I had already gotten pregnant, because I don't know that I would have chosen to have another baby, because she was such a...
It was such a scare at the time.
Yeah, such a scare. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So she's 15 months old when you find out uh-huh. about Rett's. And then as she's, how far between that diagnosis when you found that out and sweet little baby boy Titus, who's now in his 20s, went between her and Titus, what was the timeline? Like how long between those two?
Like a year until he was born. Or so, right, babe? A year?
They were 17 months apart.
17 months
apart. Oh, my goodness.
So they're very close.
Yeah.
So
so you're essentially having another baby while you're processing
totally,
this 100%. Devastating, yeah. life-altering exactly. diagnosis.
And we're getting used to having a G-tube, which is something, yes. the only way she would eat. She wouldn't eat regular food. So we're getting used to like a brand new baby, a G-tube. Yeah.
It was a lot. So like Eliana, she could not, once we finally figured out this diagnosis, Rett syndrome, when we were having all the testing initially, they said, she's probably not going to be tested positive for Rett syndrome. We think it's cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. So we're like, dang, that's going to be rough, but we'll figure that out. And then they called us like a few months later, cause they had a couple of last minute, like gene tests, DNA tests or whatever to figure it out. They said, actually she does have Rett syndrome. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then once we figured out what that potentially meant, and what the neurologist said as far as our daughter being severely mentally handicapped, mentally retarded.
That's the one that actually hit, was mentally retarded.
Yeah, he said she's going to be severely mentally retarded. Yeah. He's like, did nobody ever mention this to you? He's like, no, man, nobody ever mentioned that to us. Mm-hmm. And Abby and I were just like, felt really sad and devastated for our daughter and like what that could look like. And so through that period of time, like Abby mentioned already, she was, you know, had been falling over. She stopped being able to use her hands in the way that she was already. Mm-hmm. She couldn't like grab a toy or play with her hands. She like wouldn't be able to use her hands well. And then like feeding her jars of baby food, that was really tested our patience, because it would take like 45 minutes to feed her a little Gerber jar of food and half of it wouldn't get in her mouth. Wow. And that's why we had to do the G-tube. Mm-hmm. So she ended up being fed through her stomach, through bolus feedings.
Her whole life.
And
her
a pump.
Life. Yeah.
And so every day, how did that work, babe?
Yeah, we would use a syringe for the first half of the day. And then at night, we would set her up to a pump and it would just feed her throughout the night. So
Just little bits at a time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Would she, like, I know a few other kids who are G-tube fed and who will rip them out often.
Yeah, did she have the ability to do that? And there was a time it did come out. Yeah,
a few times it came out.
We had to stick, this is terrible, we had to stick a straw in it to hold it open so we could get it to the doctor and get it nipped back in. I mean, you have to do everything you can.
Yeah, it's real life.
Closing on you or else it's another surgery.
So. And then we figured out, like, I had it come out a couple times and I just, like, forced it back in.
And then we learned how to do it ourselves.
I was like, oh, we can do it. It was crazy. But yeah.
Wow. Okay, so.
So you start to settle in.
Yep.
To life with a severely disabled child.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine lots and lots of therapies, lots and lots of doctor's appointments.
Yep.
All while you have one other child, but then how soon did you have a third?
Yeah.
You are enjoying content brought to you by Intentional, a crowdfunded nonprofit that desires to help families and marriages all around the world in the area of discipleship and spiritual formation. This offering is completely free, thanks to the generosity of our growing community of Legacy Builders. Legacy Builders is a group of people from all over the world that gives monthly to fuel this dream that we have in our hearts of seeing discipleship to Jesus in the family become a way of life. A monthly gift of $5, $10 or even $30 can continue to fuel this ministry forward. Our dream is to invite people like you to join and partner with us at a financial level and to see this work integrated into families. So as you listen to this podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us? Would you allow the Spirit to lead you, even if it's just a few dollars a month? Thank you so much. And may the Spirit of Jesus give you wisdom, clarity, and joy as you pray about joining us. If you want to join today, go to intentionalparents.org and click on give.
Yeah, yeah, she had occupational therapy, physical therapy, we had standing machines, we had every kind of machine and whatnot just to, you know, help her build tone and create, you know, sockets. And so let's see, Titus and Tobias are 22 months apart. Wow. So we had three children in diapers at the same time.
Oh my gosh.
But not only that, when Titus came along, he started showing some signs of not speaking right away. Mm-hmm. So we got him, we had moved to Bend in that time when I was pregnant with Tobias. We got him into early intervention right away, and we found out that Titus too had autism and
didn't high functioning autism.
Yes, yeah. Didn't speak until he was 4 years old. Wow. So we were dealing with, you know, three kids in diapers. We were dealing with an autistic kid and then our handicapped kid. Titus was a great kid, but he was very challenging, yes. As you know what autism looks like. Sure, yep. Sure. It can be a challenge transitioning from things and getting them to focus on things. And very highly intelligent, but it was definitely a challenge. So Tobias came along and he was just like a little bright ray of sunshine, totally healthy.
Yep.
And he helped Titus start to communicate.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that. So yeah. Toby actually helped Titus.
Toby start. Was the one who kind of got Titus talking.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ellie
didn't talk,
Toby
so Titus
spoke before Titus did, and mm-hmm. he pretty much taught Titus how to speak.
Because Ellie didn't speak.
Correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Titus didn't actually have the I guess, example of
yeah,
his
of course.
Older daughter's his older sister speaking, you know?
Of course. So I didn't even think about that dynamic, but of course, because they learned so much. I mean, the younger ones, siblings. They learned so much from their siblings.
Right.
Yeah.
So we were like in Bend, we had these three awesome little kids mm-hmm. that were all completely unique, mm-hmm. but Ellie's stuff continued to progressively get more and more challenging. She had a back brace because she had severe scoliosis. She had hand braces,
feet braces,
a wheelchair because she couldn't walk. She never was able to walk. Mm-hmm. So we had her in a stroller until she was as long as we could, right?
Yeah, like just to kind of feel normal. I think we put off the wheelchair for a long time.
And then she was in a wheelchair and
then
we were in a wheelchair
battling pneumonia.
Van.
And so every year we would end up in the hospital with pneumonia.
Oh, she had seizures too, though.
And she did.
She was on anti-seizure medicine every day because she had really gnarly seizures. Mm-hmm. So she had pretty much all kinds of things.
All the things.
She couldn't talk, couldn't walk, couldn't feed herself, couldn't take care of herself, bathe herself, you know, anything. All the stuff, man.
Now, let's just get the timeline correct here. So you have three little ones. You're here in Bend.
Yep.
Then how long between Toby and Mateo? Mm-hmm. How far was that? And then there's also Sweet Havana, who no one could forget. So,
totally.
So tell us about how long was it between when Toby and then the two, Mateo and Havana?
Yeah, so I mean, our hands were full, so we definitely gave a little bit of a pause.
Yes,
you know, Ellie's, like he was saying, Ellie's demands were getting kind of high, and we were in and out of the hospital. So I think it's three and a half years between Tobias, which is probably nothing to some people, but three and a half years, it was good for us.
Yeah, after you had them all close together,
Three and a half years between Tobias and Mateo. And in that time, you know, when we had Mateo, Ellie started getting really bad. She was about seven. And we had gotten to the point where she really needed some intervention on her back. Her internal organs were beginning to be compromised from the curve of her scoliosis and her mm-hmm. low tone. So they suggested that we do a back surgery for her. So we decided to go ahead and move forward with that. I think Mateo was about...
Was he even one yet?
Maybe like 12 months, eight to 12 months.
Yeah. And we put it off as long as we could because Ellie was very fragile.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, she would get pneumonia.
Yeah, I was going to say she was getting pneumonia over and over and over again in part because of that, because of the curvature in her spine, right?
And not just that, but she was so low tone that she couldn't, you know, we cough and we sneeze and we get stuff out. Well, she just couldn't get anything out. And her immune system was just completely destroyed just from being on everything that she was on.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And she was going to school, so she would still get normal colds from kids. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was in
special needs class.
Special needs class.
Yeah. So Mateo's on the scene. She's seven, around seven at that
age? She's eight, yeah.
Eight. Yep. And then how long... when was Havana born?
So Havana came after Ellie passed.
Okay.
So,
which is a big part of the story. So
why don't
a little bit, tell us about that.
Yeah. So Mateo came along and we decided to move forward with Eliana's surgery. which was a big deal. And the honest truth is, here's just a little bit of like details. We knew Ellie wasn't going to live forever.
Yeah.
This was 100% made clear to us. And her Rett syndrome. You. To me. I knew that we wouldn't have her forever. Okay. And it was made clear to us that Ellie's Rett syndrome was on the more severe end of the spectrum. Yeah. She was very, very disabled. So I feel like God really comforted me in that, and that I'm not going to have this girl forever. So we were just trying to enjoy her. She was a delightful, delightful person. She was
beautiful.
She was sweet and kind. Yeah. And, you know, she would just make people joyful. She had like a joyful spirit. She had the most long suffering. She was in so much pain. She never left, you know, like either a bed or a wheelchair.
Hardly complained.
But she never.
She was just a sweet, sweet, precious child. Totally. For sure.
Totally. She was incredible. Like, if there's a picture of long suffering, it's not us, it's her. By leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
So we went ahead with the surgery, knowing very well that she may not make it through the surgery.
Yeah.
Because of its intensity.
It was a full back surgery, you guys. Like from neck to the bottom. Like it was in her whole spine.
Double titanium rods, every vertebrae separated and replaced in conjunction to those rods. It was a 10-hour surgery. Mm-hmm. We put it off as long as we could. And then when it was time, we were just like, oh man, like I hope she makes it through this. Like praying for her.
Sure.
But knowing her weakness and stuff, we were just like, we don't have a choice. We have to do this.
Yeah.
So we did the surgery. We were in Portland for like 2 weeks. And she actually did incredibly well with the surgery. And so for me, I felt like this was God's, like me interpreting, like, hey, man, she's going to be with us for the long haul. She made it through the hardest gate that could possibly face her life with flying colors. She did amazing under the surgery. She's healing well. She's in good spirits. Docs and surgeons are like pumped on it. So we came home from Portland to Bend, and we're just kind of settled. I was settling in. Abby was settling in too. Like, hey, she did awesome. Like, you know, maybe she'll be here with us till she's 30. I don't know what it would look like. Because girls with Rett syndrome, it primarily affects girls. They don't live long, but they can live to adulthood for sure.
Okay.
And so we were just kind of settling into her aftercare. And then she got a cold like, you know, many, many times before. And the cold turned to pneumonia within like a couple days. So this was like the fifth or sixth time she had pneumonia and had to go to the hospital for it. So she went to the hospital with pneumonia. And at the time, I was kind of callous to it because it was like inconvenient to me.
Sure, because it happened all the time.
Yeah, and it was kind of, you know, really kind of a selfish mental state to be in. But I was just like, okay, here we go again. Like she has pneumonia. Feeling bad for her, but just annoyed that it was just constantly happening, you know? Yeah,
another hospital stay.
And so that was really the hard part, though, because when we took her to the hospital, she was there for like a day. So Abby would go and stay with Ellie. And I own a business. I'm like working my butt off. And so I'd be going to the shop and doing my thing and then coming back. Well, like I remember vaguely Abby calling me and saying, hey, it's like more serious. You need to come down here. And so like I came down the hospital and the guy that was managing her care said, hey, you know, I need to show you something. Like you guys need to prepare yourselves. Remember?
Oh yeah.
And so he's like, he showed us the x-ray and like one of her lungs was full of fluid.
Completely.
And the other was half full. And it was like, holy crap, are you kidding me? Like, what is happening right now? And so it was like, for me, initially, I thought of it as just an inconvenience. Like, we've done this a million times. And then when I got there, within just like 2 days, like 75% of her breathing capacity was gone. And so he's like, you guys need to prepare yourselves. And then Abby and I were just like, holy cow, man, like, it got real, like, all over again. And so I think we had your mom or something come with the other kids. So they came with the other kids, and Abby and I were there with Ellie, and we like had our last moments with her, and she died in the hospital. We were with her when she died. Mm-hmm. It was pretty gnarly, man. It was pretty. Wow.
It was gnarly sobering. And beautiful. In both ways.
It was a mix, as mm-hmm. all yeah. things typically mm-hmm. were with that. It was super, yeah. super hard. Mm-hmm. And yet it was like, finally, she's also not suffering.
Yeah.
It was a mixed bag, yeah. but it was a loss. Yeah.
Did the kids get to see her before she passed?
I'm sure that they came in.
I think they came. Maybe they came.
I honestly don't.
It's been a minute. It's yeah. been a while.
Yeah.
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 Because that was how many years ago?
14.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like 14 years ago. Wow.
And she was 8.
15.
So I just remember like the hardest, one of the hardest days of our life was leaving that place with our suitcases and our wheelchair without our daughter.
It was so surreal, you guys. Oh. It was the most surreal.
It was so weird, dude.
And then when we get to our car, it literally felt like hell froze over because our car was ice all the way around. Like a shield.
You couldn't even open the freaking doors.
Ice was on our car. And it was almost just like the world had lost something really special.
Wow. Yeah.
And it did.
Yeah.
We lost something special. No kidding. For sure. But there's nothing like walking out of a place and seeing all the nurses look at you with just broken hearts because you're walking away without your child. You have to walk away.
Yeah.
So, it was the hardest thing we ever did. Hardest thing I've ever done. Very, well, we've done a lot of hard things, but
that was one of them.
That was
for sure.
The most heartbreaking thing.
So we got home and, you know, we had to explain to our kids, our other kids, that Ellie's not coming back and she's gone to be with the Lord. She's in heaven now. And it was a beginning of a whole new chapter of life for us.
We want to invite you to the Intentional Motherhood Retreat 2024. Last year, over 600 mothers gathered together to learn, to worship, both to encourage and to be encouraged. The Father spoke and the Spirit moved and Jesus healed. And it was so incredible that we cannot wait to do it again. We want to invite you October 3rd through 5th here in Bend, Oregon, where we live. We know that the journey of motherhood is both beautiful and it is hard. It is both life-giving and exhausting at times. And we just want to create space for the Spirit to refresh you in your journey. We're going to lean in to how motherhood so gently and beautifully leads us in the way of spiritual formation. We're going to talk about how we need each other on the journey. We're going to talk about how our connection with God ultimately impacts the connection that we have with our kids. This retreat is both for mothers who desire to be mothers someday, all the way to grandmothers, and anywhere in between, because the truth is we all need each other. We need to learn from each other, and we need to be together. It was Dallas Willard who said, "If you don't come apart for a while, you will come apart in a while." And that is especially true for us mothers. So we just invite you to come away with us. Let's see what the Spirit wants to do, and we can't wait to see you.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I'm just curious. Well, thank you for sharing that, you guys. I mean, every time we already know the story, and it's still so hard to hear.
Just sitting over here in a puddle crying.
I know. Well, I mean, because what you're talking, and you knew her, right? 8 years is a long time.
Sure.
Yeah. You get to know that little one. You have all your rhythms, your routines. You love them for them. Even if they're never going to be what you had thought, you still, as a parent, you still love every part of them. Mm-hmm. And you still treasure all the parts that you can.
Yeah.
Were you going to say something, honey?
Well, I'm just thinking of, not only did you have the tragedy of losing her, but you had the emotional roller coaster of all the buildup of doing the surgery and having to, that in and of itself is horrible. No parent should ever have to make those decisions. And then I would imagine the immense relief that she made it through the surgery, that she's going to be okay. I mean, Tana, what you were saying, she could be with us till she's an adult, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then just so quickly, she's gone.
Yeah. It was a roller coaster in that
regard. There's so many emotions tied up in all of Ellie's story of having a handicapped child. And you know, like going to little kids' birthday parties and feeling so horrible that they can't play or, you know, be part of the parties. They just sit in the corner and observe. And as parents, it's so hard to watch your kid not be able to be part of life. You know, we know this all too well. You guys will hear the rest of our story, but we had to grieve through all of that. We were grieving the loss of having a normal child, and then grieving that she was handicapped, and then grieving that she couldn't be, you know, part of society in the way people are supposed to, or what looks normal.
All the progression benchmarks never came.
And with all of that comes questions to God, and like
that was my question.
It's like anger. He has a different story than I do. I feel like God comforted me and gave me strength through Ellie's life to prepare for it. But Tano and I, you know, we're different, very different in how we see things. And Tano had a way harder experience of like accepting Ellie's diagnosis and accepting Ellie's death.
I'd be curious if you guys don't know, tell me a little bit about that. What was your process like?
And oh man, okay, well,
scratch the surface on it.
I had a hard time with all of it.
Course you did.
I was upset. Upset that my daughter was like a normal life was stole from her. I was upset about that. I was upset that she couldn't eat, that she couldn't talk, that she couldn't walk. I grew callous. And I like still, I thank God that he kept me enough to sustain and be with me. But I had to come to a place, and I guess it's maybe my nature, but I'm not comfortable with trite answers. I'm not comfortable with like systematic reasoning, understanding of God's will and levels of will and what that looks like. And things happen because of this or things happen because of that. It's like, I feel like when you wade through it and you're honest about it, for me at least, my conclusion is, I don't know. How, why, all the componentry of this thing, but I know it's messed up. And I know that God is aware, and I still know that God is good. So you have to like walk in this in between a lot. And that's kind of how I dealt with her struggles. And when she passed, it was kind of like another element of it, because it was like, well, on one hand, finally, Lord, you're not making my daughter suffer anymore, or you're not letting her suffer, or you're not allowing her to suffer, or seeing her suffer, however you want to frame that,
all the different theological frameworks, whichever one is accurate.
She's done with her suffering, and I'm grateful to the Lord Jesus for that, but she's gone now. She's gone from me right now, so that's a whole nother can. So like, man, it's been a challenge. Like, and then when she died, it was like heartbreakingly sad. Like, it was like, but also like this mix of like relief that she's not suffering. But then, you know, Abby really processed it super, super, like how a good loving person should. I just wanted to like keep my family floating, like make sure she's okay, make sure my kids are okay, like keep going. And so I like, when things get hard, I just kind of work harder. And so I didn't really grieve very well, and I'm not like really good at it, honestly.
Welcome to the club.
That's the truth.
Welcome to the club.
There was the few moments where, you know, I was just traveling through grief, and it's just so hard when it's your primary role to be a caregiver to this child. And I mean, my other children too, but I mean, I was doing therapies, and you know, every week was scheduled out. You know this all too well. It's scheduled out. This is your primary role, and then it's gone.
It's gone.
And then you're a normal family. And for me, that was probably one of the hardest moments, was that now we're normal. We looked normal to everyone. We never looked normal. We had a handicapped child who did not look normal. It was very obvious when wheelchairs and burp cloths and, you know, I mean,
wheelchair vans,
we did not look normal. And now all of a sudden, my part of my identity is gone and we look normal.
And you're carrying a grief that nobody can see.
Yeah, it was really
and
weird.
And walking into Target was like, the whole world was like numb to me. Like I didn't want to look at people and no one knew what I had just lost, which was like my child. No one knew what I had lost. Mm. But yet they were looking at me and the same as, you know, every other family. Like I've got three little boys and that's it. But no, that wasn't it. Like, yeah. So we had to relearn how to be a different form of a family. Like it was normal. Wow. It was freeing in some sense because we couldn't go to the beach with Ellie and we couldn't go on a hike with Ellie and we couldn't
go to restaurants.
Go and do all these things that normal families can do. And now we could do that.
But now there's an immense grief attached to the beauty of a new experience.
Hole. Such a mixed bag.
It was weird.
It was such a mixed bag.
And I feel like not only did we not really know how to process that and, you know, kind of digest it, those around us didn't either.
No.
Of course.
And I think that was one of the biggest frustrations for me was like our community at times, you know, we'd be going through something really, really hard. And it was like, you know, let's look the other way or let's like, you know, people like,
oh, I know.
You know what I mean? Like, let's just talk about football or something stupid.
Well, it's too hard for them to hold. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we've experienced this too, but yeah, it's, your pain brings up their pain and most of the time people just don't even know what to say.
Exactly.
And so they say nothing, which is actually unfortunately more hurtful.
It can be very painful.
It's like, just acknowledge that you know that this just happened. Mm-hmm. Like just, you don't even need you to solve it.
Totally.
Just
it's nobody's fault.
No,
at
of course
all.
Not. No, no. It's just a byproduct of the culture that many of us live in, but
we don't live in a culture that knows how to grieve for more than a minute.
Yeah.
Like we know how to be sad and then move on.
Yep.
And so not only did you guys experience long suffering, I mean, just her whole life was suffering, both for her and for you guys. Mm-hmm. And then incredible loss. And I think in most, you can spot that the people who can walk with you in it usually have also suffered deeply. Mm-hmm. And I love that, you know, post-COVID, there's more language around it than there used to be. So I have hope that maybe it will change. And I think the more that people share their stories and share the loneliness of suffering and grief and how much we need people to just stay faithfully in it with us, send us a text message, say, hey, I see you. Hey, I would imagine this is probably hard. Yeah. You know, I think it's us who have suffered who have to start that conversation as much as it shouldn't be that way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the loneliness that comes with grief that never ends. You're still grieving her loss. You will never stop grieving her loss.
Totally. We've been watching home videos and it's just a reminder of how much we loved her. Like when you watch a video and you see how much love she had, like how much love we had for her, it's just, it grieves me. I mean, it's like we're still missing that, but
But it does get a lot easier.
It does get so much easier.
Everybody says that, but in time, it actually, it kind of just does.
And the sweet memories remain. And
walk us through that a little bit, though. I'm thinking of the people listening who are in the acute phase of grief, and they feel like it's going to bury them, or they're recognizing they've just been working harder and not feeling, and they're beginning to feel like, not that grief has a process because it doesn't, but I do know there's long years of grief that feels like it's going to suffocate you. Yeah. And then that grief slowly changes. It never leaves, but it slowly changes and beautiful joy starts to arise. But it's like this long, arduous journey. So are there any like marked moments or memories or just like seasons of it that you remember?
Yeah.
Where maybe darkness lifted a little bit or you thought it was never going to lift.
Sure. Yeah, totally. And I mean, I grieved very differently than Tano. And I think most marriages can relate to just, we're just so built so differently. And I grieved hard and long. And I got pregnant after 9 months after she died. So,
there was, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So when I got pregnant, I was so overjoyed and I knew what God was doing. I knew it was a healing process for us to like move forward. But I think if you don't spend that time grieving and you don't enter into that process, and we can talk about this with Tano, but you almost do a disservice to the whole life of that person. It's like, you are missed. Like, this is not the same. And I don't see any shame in grieving, you know, for a long period of time. There is a time to pick up and put your life back together and start building a new life. There's a time for that, but there's a time for grief. You know, there's a time to
There's no timeline on it.
And there's no timeline. Everyone is so different in how they grieve and how they move through the process. And, you know, I was home with my kids, so I got to just pour into my kids. But when I got pregnant, I do remember very clearly still being very much void of joy. And it wasn't that I wasn't happy. I mean, I wasn't. I was sad. I was broken. But there was just this joy missing that I wasn't overflowing with. And I still was connected to the Lord. I had a very intimate, deep walk with Jesus at that time. He was so close. But I just couldn't find that joy. Like, my heart just couldn't, like, breathe in joy. And when I was pregnant with Ellie, I just really went before the Lord. And Havana. I went before the Lord and I just asked that he would restore my joy, because I wanted this child that I was carrying to feel like she wasn't coming into a broken, sorrowful situation. And I feel that your children that you carry can feel some of your, you know, emotions and things you're going through. So I just asked the Lord, would you please just restore my joy so this child could come out into a joyful situation? And not the joy that's giddy and happy. You guys know the joy I'm talking about. It's that deep, deep, like, real feeling joy. Of just, just love and compassion. And so I felt like he did. He restored, he restored so much when I was pregnant with Havana. And And I wasn't done grieving. Having a new girl come into my life, which was Havana. It reminded me of Ellie. It brought back memories. But at the same time, I feel like the Lord knows what's right. And he healed so many of, like, the years that, you know, I was grieving her, not playing, not dancing, not walking. So now I had this normal little girl who was going to crawl and walk and dance. And
she was absolutely beautiful.
And the moment she was born... Tano kept saying, I want to name her Precious. I want to name her Precious. I mean, it was such a surreal moment when she was born.
She was beautiful.
I mean, there was just a full circle. And God brought so much joy into our life with Havana.
So she was a definite healing aspect.
And not that having a baby is the way to heal from a loss.
But no, but it was redemptive.
It healed some of us. But I do see a lot of people who lose. There's a season of death, and then there's a season of new birth. And however that looks, sometimes it's a baby, sometimes it's a new move or a new situation or someone coming into your life or new relationships. I often, and as I've walked through other people who have gone through death, there is some sort of new birth that comes. And it seems to be a pattern I see in the way God does things. So
that's really cool.
And for you, it was an actual physical birth as well as a... spiritual one. That is so, I mean, just the redemption of having Havana almost, you know, full circle, being a healthy little girl, just a miracle of that, you know, like, what a gift. And so Havana gets onto the scene. Now you have three boys and a girl instead of a girl and three boys. Now you got Havana. Now through all this time, Titus is still working through, you're still raising a son with autism.
And OCD.
And OCD is a big one too, right? And so you have the challenges already, or continues with what's going on with Titus. And then through the meantime, Toby's doing okay. And you've got this powerhouse Mateo.
He's doing okay.
And now you had this little sweet Havana.
Yeah.
How long, and we're going to get to the next part of your story. But how long was it that you guys were kind of in that state where now you have four kids? Ellie is
doing pretty good.
She's not suffering any longer, you know, obviously. Of course, catastrophic loss that never goes away. But kind of how long before you adjusted this to this new normal before the next chapter? we have a new offering for you. If you would like to receive daily or weekly text messages and encouragement around parenting, marriage, with prayers and scriptures, click the link in the show notes and we would love to send those to you. Can't wait to connect more with you.
I'd love to take this one.
Yeah.
Is that cool? Okay, so essentially all that stuff happened and we have our new beautiful little daughter. I'm still running my business. I had done.
Yeah, explain your business real quick.
Yeah, so I'm a dental technician. I make teeth.
Yeah. Yes. Cool teeth.
I make, yeah.
You can make grills for people.
I make grills, baby.
I make very skilled at it and running his own business.
But yeah, I own a dental laboratory and I had one prior at this time. And I was really driven. I had bought in rentals and we were like in all this debt and chaos and not just in our life, but in our business life. At least I felt very...
Well, working from like 5 a.m. to 11 p.m. was kind of the story.
Yeah, I was working 70, 80 hours a week, dude. Wow.
What?
It was nuts.
And your kids were little?
My kids were little.
Oh, yeah.
And we had four mortgages because I thought it was smart to own real estate at that time. It was right before the market crashed.
No way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so we had been... Aside from all the family like dynamics of our children and Ellie and her surgery and death and all the stuff, was all this background stuff gone. Well, after Havana came to be part of our family, I had a moment with the Lord where he showed me my priorities needed to change. And I needed to be more present to my family, to my wife, to my kids. And I was trying to build my own kingdom when God wanted to build his kingdom in and through our life. And so at that time, he completely changed our trajectory. And long story short, we sold everything we owned and we, which is a story in itself, but we sold everything we owned and houses, literally all our stuff. We got it down to 13 suitcases.
Sold your business.
Sold my business, borrowed a van, took a road trip for about 6 weeks down to Cali, saying later to family, because the Lord clearly spoke to me in that time that I am to move to Costa Rica with my family, which is a totally really cool story, but probably not today's.
Yeah.
But we moved to Costa Rica, all of us with the kids, and we moved down to like San Isidro. We didn't speak Spanish. We didn't know people, but we knew for sure the Holy Spirit told us to do this. So we moved there. So we lived there. And that we were there for like 9 months-ish. And we were all about finding our new center of God, of our family dynamic, of our children, of what living in another country and culture would be. And so our life completely changed. It wasn't just like a new start here, it was like, let's freaking start fully. And so we moved to Costa, and that's where we were.
Yeah. We lived there for 9 months, and then we moved back to the States after a long process of reevaluating. And we moved to Portland.
So after Costa Rica was Portland.
Yeah, we moved to Portland.
Okay.
Which begins a new story in our
life. So Portland, what year was that roughly, or how long?
2014.
So you moved back in 2014. And so tell me about, tell us the next chapter. So 2014, you're in Costa Rica. You guys moved back.
To Portland. And we were looking for a place. We wanted to stay in Portland. We liked it. We moved into a house. And we started noticing one of our sons was having a lot of panic attacks, Titus.
Yeah.
And then Mateo was beginning to get sick all the time with something. We didn't know what. And Tano started getting really like things just started happening in his mind that weren't normal.
That's a nice way of saying it. I started losing my mind.
And we realized that we were in a black mold house. And so we had to evacuate overnight out of that house. And which just really started a whole cascade of health issues.
So like you had this little reprieve moment.
In Costa Rica.
And then we come back to
Come back. And as soon as we get in this house, which we were like stoked on, I moved my business there. I finally got the ground running again with that. Yeah. And then all these things started happening.
Yeah.
And so we should probably make this.
I'm going to cut this short, but yeah. We lived in Portland. We evacuated that house. We moved into another house, and Mateo is getting really sick. He's starting to not want to go to school, and he's starting to not want to get up in the morning. And if he does, he's not feeling well, not feeling well, not feeling well. And we're like, oh my goodness. And the market there is just going skyrocket.
Mm-hmm.
We were ending up having to pay like $3,000 in rent, which now is normal.
Plus I had
but back then it was like, you got to be kidding me. We got to do something. So we ended up evacuating Portland and moving to the Rogue Valley.
To just try to change.
To try find to a get simpler, back on top of everything.
Because my work was starting to swallow me up again. I had two businesses we were starting in Portland. We'd just gone through this black mold scenario and had to remediate all our stuff pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And then our kids are having health issues now. Mm-hmm. And it's like, man, we were in that state for, we were in Portland for like 3 years, but we were in that kind of zone of things for a year and a half. So we moved to Medford thinking maybe I can do a different career. Maybe we can just like get by some family of ours and like find a simpler, more peaceful, less expensive life. So we moved to Medford.
Yeah. And I mean, it was a new season for us. Our kids started public school, which was cool for me to step out of homeschooling for the first time in a long time. And, but there was something happening with Mateo and we couldn't quite figure it out, but he had gotten this virus and he was acting really strange, very sick, vomiting a lot. And, we couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. And as things started progressing, and we can tell you more details, it all went so fast. And he got basically something called PANS or PANDAS. You guys are aware of that a lot. It's more common now. Back then, nobody had heard of it. And so we
explain what that is. What is PANS?
Pediatric acute neuropsychiatric
syndrome.
Set on by strep or but some other
acute,
virus.
It's not acute, it's autoimmune.
Some is acute, but yeah.
Yeah, so it's autoimmune neuropsychiatric disorder.
Right.
Yep.
Sorry, it's been a while.
Yeah. I know, I can't even always remember what the letters stand for.
I know.
Well, acute means something's just short-lived and ours wasn't. So yes. I just wanted to make that distinction.
Yes.
Yeah, and so, you know, in this time we decided he was going downhill very quickly where he was actually literally going into a psychiatric state. And so we went up to Portland to try to get some answers like you do, like up at the Portland. We took him to the emergency room. They admitted us and they basically said that he just needs some anti-anxiety medicine. And we don't believe in PANS. We don't believe it's a thing. We're not going to treat him.
Yeah.
And they sent us home and gave us antibiotics and, you know, like a calming medicine,
which did nothing,
which just aggravated the situation. And I don't know how to make this long story
short.
I should frame
the beginning day.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's important.
I think that's important.
Yeah.
So you're hearing our story, kind of getting the dynamic. We're in Medford. Mm-hmm. Our youngest son Mateo is having these health complications, but then they become more panicky, anxiety ridden ones. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember the day I was playing a show at a coffee house.
Because you're also an incredible musician, which everyone needs to understand, but keep going.
Thanks, buddy. So I was playing a show at a coffee house. And that night, I remember coming back to my house. And when I came home, Abby was incredibly concerned with Mateo because he was not in his right mind and something terribly wrong was going on. He was holding his head. He was rolling on the floor and he was screaming over and over again, unconsolably, for about 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at that moment where Abby and I were looking at each other like something horribly wrong is here right now. Something really bad, something really not normal or okay is happening. And we couldn't, we knew something serious was going on and totally out of our norm. So we were praying for him, trying to like see what kind of dynamic this was. And after about maybe 3.5 hours of all of a sudden our son not looking at us like normal, like almost like not in nobody's home, like he's looking through us all of a sudden, like any question we ask the answer to everything.
We thought it was like a demonization.
We thought it was, it felt demonic.
Yeah.
Sure, okay? Sure.
Yeah. So everything that we were saying, it was just like, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And it was something clearly had snapped and had taken the physical and anxiety-ridden stuff he was dealing with and made it to a whole nother level. And it happened in a day.
Yeah.
And when we finally got him to his room, I remember I was washing the dishes. It was like 2 a.m. And all of a sudden, I know this sounds super weird, but I heard a voice say to me, I'm going to take your son away from you. And it was a demon, dude. It was like the devil.
Whoa.
Straight up. Not making that up at all. All my hair on my neck and my arms stood up. And I said, no, you're not. Because whatever I commit to the Lord belongs to him. And I commit Mateo to Jesus. And I remember, like, it was so weird, dude. This happened in my kitchen sink. But that dynamic that night was so strange in my home that I felt like I was entering into a spiritual battle in some capacity for my son right on day one. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Wow. Yeah,
so that's what started this whole thing with Mateo.
Wow.
And things just got gnarly from there.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So many things. for the sake of the story, well, because our son also got diagnosed with this very same thing, and we've had a journey. Ours looked different in the sense of how it's played out, and but the health journey that you guys have been on, to say that we can relate is an understatement. You know, we can relate. But Mateo's story, as to the extremeness of the setup of that day, that kind of has, that extreme moment has kind of played out with him through this. It's been extreme all the way.
Yeah, yes.
Totally. So maybe just give as much as you feel comfortable, but also just, you know, give us a picture of from that moment to today, maybe, because there's been a lot in between. What has his life looked like? And obviously, conclusively, what has your life looked like because of that? But start with him. What has his life looked like? That moment happened.
If you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here. There's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers.
He was 9 years old. It was before his 10-year, it was right before his 10th birthday.
Okay.
Yeah.
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 And he completely changed his personality in a day. It was like a totally different person.
Yeah, Mateo was gone.
Yeah.
That's what we say often with Duke, because Duke was gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole process was like a 4.5-year extreme process. Mateo was angry. He was violent. He was stuck in his room. He couldn't leave his room. We got
when you say that, though, I think it's important for people to know. He literally would not leave his room. That's not an exaggeration. Like, he just came out once in a while.
Yeah.
Would not physically leave his room.
He could not. Yeah.
He would use the restroom, and that was it. But even, like, trying to get him to shower was like you were stealing a child from their mother. You know, I mean, it was like you were pulling a bear out of his cave. And it was literally hell for every single one of the people in our family.
It was like, throwing 20 M80s in the living room Yeah. It was really, really.
So we were living in this broken place of like our son being stuck in his room, totally isolated out of his mind. The rest of us. We couldn't go anywhere as a family because someone always had to be with Mateo.
Yeah.
He was young at the time. And even once he got a little bit older, within that 4 years, we still didn't feel safe to leave him in his room by himself.
No.
So it was like Tana would go do something with the kids. I would stay home, or we'd swap. He'd go to church with the kids. I would stay home. You know, there was we counted 3 times total in those 4.5 years that we went somewhere and someone would watch our kids or would watch him so we could take our kids out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
It was so rare. Even family had a very, very hard time being around Mateo because it was such a different person.
Yeah, it was like, and when you say like wouldn't leave his room, it wasn't a matter of like, I just don't feel up for it today.
No.
It was a matter of like, I remember trying to first like get him to run it off because I didn't know what to do. I was like,
of course,
hey, buddy, let's just go outside and like take a walk down the road. And remember, you got like super panicked.
It was like panic. Major
it was
panic
incredible attack. Panic. Incredible panic.
I don't even feel like panic attack scratches the surface.
It doesn't.
It's like the closest thing that people might connect to.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's.
Yeah.
But it was like it doesn't even scratch the surface.
Yeah. Extreme fear.
Like something truly
like you're
is going
worried
to eat
about
him.
Someone murdering you and like ripping you into pieces.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So first it was like you couldn't leave the boundary of this like dirt road when I was trying to get him to walk it off. Then it was like the next day was like couldn't leave the front door. Then he couldn't leave the boundary line from the hall. And then it was not able to leave his room. And he literally forgot like where the bathroom was. Mm-hmm. And he could only just go from his room to his bathroom. And any minute that he wasn't looking at a screen to stimulate his mind and distract him from whatever was going on in his mind, he was in sheer rage panic.
Mm-hmm.
And so we like had to figure out how to get him to like
calm down.
So it was like this constant intensity, man.
And I have to be totally honest, like we... Like you guys, we raised our kids like screen free.
I know you did.
We only did video games like Saturday mornings for like an hour or two.
Of course, this is breaking every ideal you've ever had.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, we've got a kid who cannot sit in his room like sanely without having something playing in front of him. So we had to literally like be like, "Hey boys, go play a video game with him so he'll calm down so he wouldn't like continue to scream." So we were like band-aiding it. And all of a sudden, like all of our ideals were slipping through our fingers.
Of course.
This
he
is
wouldn't
not...
no longer eat the food.
Yeah.
He wouldn't do the thing. It was like challenged every rhythm of everything that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And so what it began to look like was we were pretty much just trying to survive each day and keep our kids, give our other kids some semblance of normal.
Yeah.
Which was not really possible, but like, let him know, like, we're still with him. It's going to be okay. But your brother's going to be all right. Like every single day. And I started sleeping on his floor because
I remember this.
Yeah.
So like I slept on my son's floor for 2.5 years, every single night.
I remember this.
And when you say challenging on a marriage, not just the sleeping on the floor and not even being able to connect, but just the way, I mean, you guys understand this, the way you deal with that child, that's totally crazy. We didn't agree all the time. It was like, you can't talk to him like that. That's not helpful. And he's like, how do you talk to him then? Because we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're totally navigating uncharted waters. And neither one of us had answers. Neither one of us knew what we were doing. And it was frustrating because all of our parenting tricks and tips and things we had learned.
Everything none normal. Of it applies anymore.
It was like, why don't
discipline,
you, our parents would say, why don't you spank him? It's like, that's not,
there's
nothing
that.
To
didn't
do
work.
With this. It's so irrelevant in the situation. It was so beyond us. And it started to really push against
everything.
Our marriage
and
our children and how we were dealing with the situations. And and lo and behold, the house that we were living in when we were in that house ended up having
in
mold
Medford.
As well.
We had to test it and it was moldy too.
So we ended up throwing everything we owned in that house into a dumpster and moving back
everything.
To Bend.
Everything. So
everything.
This was
I
the second
this.
House. So we were trying, we spent 2 years, tens of thousands of dollars to figure out why Mateo is struggling. What is going on with him? No one has answers.
Nobody.
Yep. Every kind of like fringe expensive, rare, yes, weird test you can do. Nothing.
Yes.
And then the doc says, hey, man, when I hit a road like this and there's like nothing left to check, I say, check the house for mold. So we checked it and it was high. And I said, you got to be kidding me. How can this happen to us two times now? And so, like Abby said, we didn't mess around, because if that's what was causing our son to lose himself like this, it was
no brainer. Throw it all away.
So we literally, this is true. We threw everything away
in a dumpster
that we owned
in the frame
to like eliminate spores from following us. Right. And so we stayed with my other sister for a month while we tried to figure out what to do next. And we ended up moving back to Bend, yes, because it was high desert climate.
And dry.
Our thoughts were, hey, man, there's going to be less chance of mold here. Let's just go somewhere that's mold free, where our chance of Mateo doing better will work.
Right. And in that move, we moved up, but I lived here and Tana lived in Medford for 3 months to transition.
That's right.
So we didn't even live in the same house. So I was caretaking for Mateo. Tana was coming up every other weekend or whenever he could.
Because I still had my business there. And I didn't want to hard stop it again and start over again.
Right.
Yeah, because it's really tricky.
Yeah.
So we had to, so once he finally ended up getting up here, I really felt like everything went kind of south because Mateo got sicker instead of better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everything went deeper down the rabbit hole. Our marriage was being tested on every front.
No kidding.
You know, just the stress of it. Then 2020 hit. You know, we're struggling with a business. We've got a child who's completely isolated. We're trying to raise now teenage sons.
Nobody's going to the dentist and needing teeth made.
So to say it was like such a stretching season. And I mean, Tano and I were talking about this and it was like, there was just no reprieve. There was no place to go. It was like we had to be in it and we were not agreeing on anything. And the stress was elevating. And it was really causing like a chasm in our world. And we couldn't just make it better.
Yeah. It was like the constant bombardment of intensity in our home. And I do not use those words lightly.
No.
Plus having no bed of my own, no bedroom of my own, because I'm always sleeping on his floor. I'm up till 2 a.m. with him. And then I'm up at 6 to go to work. And then the distance that causes between a husband and his wife, and then all the intensity of like, why are you making him yell at you? Why are you making him upset? And it's like, you have no idea. You're not in the room. Right. No, it's just like constant friction.
Yeah. Of course.
And it was like so hard. Yeah. It was so hard. But some of the nuggets we found in that was like, I am blessed with a super good wife, truly. And like, she helped me frame something when stuff felt so undoable. Mm-hmm. And she said, listen, this isn't about you and me. Mm-hmm. Like, we love each other. It feels hard right now because we're in a tornado. It's not you and me. It's the situation we're in. And sometimes like framing the chaos is really, really helpful.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's true. Like, that is true. The reason you're not the problem, I'm not the problem. This situation is the problem.
Yeah.
Sure.
And it's like, just having the reality framed in that way was helpful.
Yeah.
Mm. And we would have to continue to come back to that. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, we'd have conversations that were really honest and helpful, and it was tough.
Wow. Yeah. That's a really, really wise and thoughtful and very helpful thing to remember and to know. I mean, because I mean, how often is that the conclusion? You're the problem. Mm-hmm. And because at the same time, all of the stuff going on in your kids brings all this stuff up in you, all the stuff that you've dealt with and haven't, it just comes in and out. So that you move to Bend, there's the tension, you're sleeping on the floor. I remember those days, man. I remember. And you were right. I think if anything, you're underselling how intense it was, not overselling. It was such a crazy season for you guys. But even with that, like, so kind of give us that happened. You're in the 2-year period of sleeping on the floor. When did he start to, make changes, or when has changes occurred? Like, what did that look like? And then where is he at now?
Yeah. We got a little bit desperate because we'd been to every doctor mm-hmm. that you could possibly.
I say literally. 28 doctors. She says 15 to 20.
I say 15 to 20. But there was a lot. Let's just put it
lot.
That way.
That's yeah. a lot.
And we kind of finally, someone really special in our life had brought up maybe he needs some deliverance. And so we.
Some spiritual deliverance.
Some spiritual deliverance. We entertained that and we went down that road. And we tried, and we did see that through Mateo's life, other people were being healed. And we were like, okay, well, other people, that's so amazing. I mean, what a testimony that his suffering created someone else's healing, which is really beautiful. And we can talk about that story some other time, but painful at the same time because someone else got healed.
And when
we were trying to do deliverance for ourselves.
He needs it so bad.
And he needed it so bad. And we wanted it so bad. And so we just walked away from even like deliverance moments.
Deep deliverance moments. Seeing some things
get a little better, but not huge transformations.
There were small things. What did those small things
There were small things like he would take a shower without us forcing him, or he would brush his teeth. He would maybe take a vitamin without us forcing it on him. You know, these were things that were like full-blown battles before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so finally we saw a few breakthroughs, but not enough to like rejoice yet. Like just like little things.
Yeah. Little hopeful things.
Little
that
hopeful
were substantial,
things
though.
That were big for us.
Yeah, they were big for us.
But he wasn't out of his room. He was still not looking at us or talking to us or coming. You know, like we didn't have him
back. We didn't see his face for 15 months. Let me put it that way. Yeah. That is not.
I didn't even know what my son looked like. Guys.
Yeah. Literally.
Oh, while he's going through puberty and rapidly
changing. And I wanted to see him so badly.
Remember, he got sick and wouldn't leave his room when he was 9 years old.
Yeah.
And so this chaos had phases. And like, but then there was just like this long stretch. Yes, there was all the doctors, there was all the like pastors, deliverance people, spiritual people.
Yeah.
Mateo never fit in any exact box. He wasn't like, oh, he has this.
Sure.
You know, or, oh, he has this. It was like, it looks like this and it looks like this, but it doesn't look like that. And nobody knew anything. It was like in between every crack.
There was a few really pivotal moments where I felt like the Lord was telling me to not pray according to what I wanted, but pray according to what he wanted. And most of my prayers up until that point were, do you see us? Do you see what's happening? Do you see my family being destroyed, Lord? Can you step in now, please? Can you do something? Can you please? Like really a grieving mom's heart. Like please, please begging to do something. And I surrendered and I was like, I'm just going to pray according to what you want. And you want to see character develop and you want to see growth in our family and you want to see us trust you. And it was like not something you want to do, but something that was required at that moment. And that was one pivotal moment. But the second pivotal moment after the deliverance and after we finally went to a really specialist doctor and he didn't have any answers for us. And we knew that was the end of the road.
It was so
we knew that was the last
It was like,
attempt.
Well, $550 for a half hour phone consultation.
Yeah, like, I remember that. That was like the East Coast doctor. Right?
And there was just nothing, dude.
Finally, I just went before the Lord and he was, it was like, it was the moment. He was like, let everything else go. I am the healer. Let everything else, let all the doctors go. The vitamins, the supplements, the medication, let it all go. Let every deliverance guy, anybody. So I just surrendered everything. I took all the vitamins away. I took all the supplements away.
Yeah, I remember.
I decided I wasn't going to do anything but surrender and just say, you are the healer.
Yeah.
And you will heal my son.
We can do absolutely no man.
I couldn't do anything
no
else.
No man can do anything.
Yeah.
We can do nothing. No doctor can do nothing. No, anybody. No pastor. No counselor. This is a God thing. If there's going to be any change in this, in the gravity of the situation, it has to be God. And it was no longer like just the right thing to say or think. It was the truth.
It was literally the only
It was literally the truth.
And I think it's important to highlight that you guys did that after you tried all that stuff. Because I think there's a lot of people that go, you know, there's that other swing of like, we don't touch medicine. We just, you know, we don't, but you guys had already done everything for years to the point.
Yeah, I mean, so this is 4.5 years into this.
Yeah, 4.5
Totally.
And I truly believe that it wasn't that before I didn't have faith enough to say, God, you're the healer. I did. through the whole thing, I felt like I had enough faith to say that.
Yeah.
But I think that it was just God saying, it's time. Mm. And I want you to completely surrender. It was not that, you know, I didn't have enough faith to heal my son or that, you know, any of those things. It was that God's timing had come to fruition.
Yeah. That's huge.
And he wanted us to step back now.
Because it's not always connected to our faith or how much faith we have. No. Or there are dynamics happening that God does in our lives that we have no idea of.
Sure.
And when his timing is right, things are going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to happen a second before he wants them to happen.
Sure, sure.
And so it was really cool because I do remember that too. We were just kind of, I was numb.
Mm-hmm.
I had nothing. We were spent, man. We were so tired. I just remember laying in bed and being like, I don't know if this is ever going to change, but I'm tired. I'm done.
Oh, I was getting to the point where it was hard to even get
out of
bed.
Like, I don't even know what else can do.
Of course. Emotionally, physically, we were really becoming a shell of like,
yeah.
Because we were so drawn to the end of our rope.
So we had some really good news though. Finally, there was a ray of sunshine that happened, man. And it was a true miracle. And so we were, every year that Mateo's birthday would come through this, we would set up a party. We would set up cupcakes and do all thing and try to get him to come down out of his room and like, you know,
celebrate his birthday.
Yeah. And it was always just like totally out of his mind and like that wasn't going to happen. And so for like a few months when we were starting to see these little things like, oh, wow, he's brushing his teeth. Like, wow, he's, you know, he's not yelling. It was like Abby would plant the seed like, hey, Mateo, I think God is doing work in you. I think like your time in this room is coming to an end. And we're praying that on your 14th birthday, he'll come out. And so I remember his 14th birthday comes and we're like reading a devotional in the morning. And I can't remember the exact words, but it was like, there was a different sense of hope in my heart and hers that I can attest to.
Like
that felt like
gonna
today is going to be the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading this. I remember reading this devotional and it was something like, I can't remember the exact wording, but God was talking about like his people and it said, and the Lord is going to unite so-and-so to be back with his people again. And it felt like a word from the Lord. And I said, I believe that word is for Mateo today and that he's going to bring him back to his people. And so we set up a birthday party for him. We bought a bunch of tacos and we didn't bring his gifts to his room or anything like that. Mm-hmm. We went up there and said, hey, Mateo, happy birthday, dude. You're 14 years old. Today's the day the Lord is going to deliver you. And, you know, it was crazy because why don't you say something about that?
Yeah. I mean, we basically presented it and we just waited. We sat outside his door and we waited. And he hadn't left his room in like 4 years.
Yeah.
It was like such a
truly.
Feat. Or spoken to you. How long had it been since he'd spoken to you?
Well, now it's been 3 years since we talked to Mateo. But
we didn't see his face for 15 months because we would bring his meals into his room and every time he'd turn around and scream like shut up or just go or whatever it was. So we didn't know what he looked like. We would always try to see his face and it would just be like not doable.
That is so
long story short, he came out of his room that day and he came back into our family.
Everybody was in shock, dude.
It wasn't perfect. He wouldn't look at us. He would turn his face.
He had super, super long hair. He looked like a handsome young man face.
Yeah.
I mean, when he went in there, he was a little child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like Nebuchadnezzar coming back to his mind, bro.
That's what I mean. Yeah, that, like the visuals I'm getting. Yes. Yeah. Keep going.
Yep.
And he's 16 now.
So he's
We've had a journey from
years.
The time that he came out. He wasn't perfectly mentally back, you know.
Sure.
He's had some health struggles with his own back and we're navigating those.
Mm.
He's going to school. He's getting straight A's.
At his grade level.
He did
level.
Not go to school That's for incredible. 4 years. That's nothing.
He's freaking smart.
But also,
super strong.
He's so smart. But I just wanted to encourage some people because I was so concerned about education and my kids getting these like perfect, the way our family appeared, like all these vain things that were so important to me. But my son comes out, he doesn't look perfect. His grades were not perfect when he came out. And I was, it was so important to me with my other children. And I just realized I didn't care what his grades were. I didn't care what people thought of him. I just was so grateful to have my son back. Like, we focus so much on like these thing, idealist things we have in our own heads, but really like just to see my son socialize with another child, your guys' child, just to see our son out of his room and be present.
It's amazing.
I could care less if he's perfect at his grades, although he is now. He's straight A's now. That was so irrelevant. It was like people were like, oh, he's not doing so good at this. I'm like, I honestly don't care.
He's alive.
I don't care. You have no idea what is happening in his life right now. I don't care about those things. They're not that important in the long run. That he is actually a healthy human and like in love with Jesus.
But you know what's cool about that though, babe, is the gap. There was a giant gap, right? It was 4.5 years of no school.
None.
And then he comes, he goes to school, and guess what? He's in his normal grade level, man. And he's getting straight A's. How does that happen? That's amazing. This huge deficiency is just like, it's all good.
Well, Mateo's very driven now.
Yeah.
He works out all the time. He's incredibly strong. You guys know this.
I know this.
He studies.
He's
an awesome kid. He's a very dedicated, awesome young man. I'm super, super
proud without his struggles. He's still struggling. Yeah. We're still working through things.
Like he does not speak right now.
No. He's still,
he's come out, but he's not spoken to you.
Yeah.
Or spoken to anybody. He doesn't speak. He came out.
Not that we know of, but
yeah.
You know what's so cool though?
We don't know.
Anytime he's over here, but the thing is, he doesn't use words, but he communicates.
Oh, he communicates. You guys know this better than anybody.
I mean, he literally texts it out.
Yeah, he'll text it out. But I mean, I joke
with his facial expressions.
I joke with him all the time. My favorite thing is how much when he laughs, you don't hear him talk, but then he laughs the deepest man laugh you've ever heard. You're like, I didn't know that was in there. His sense of humor even, and he's completely, although he's not speaking, he is 100% with it and understands, and like you're attesting to mentally, emotionally, he's present, he's sharp. What a crazy, I'm just like, you know, even just reflecting, what a crazy, crazy story, what a miracle, especially after the loss of Eliana, to feel like this too, God, like this too, can it be fair? Yeah. So maybe just a couple things, you know, you had mentioned a few times, and I think this is where I know we felt it a ton, but this attacks your marriage more than it attacks anything, because you guys are supposed to be the strong ones. You guys are supposed to be okay. Things are supposed to be fine. What are some of the things that, you know, even to give some people hope who are struggling with catastrophic loss, because the divorce rate for anybody that's gone through even one thing that you've gone through is like, what is it, 80-something%? It's through the roof. It's almost as high as you can get.
It's loss of a child, disabilities, health, cancer of a child, like 90% of marriages end in divorce.
Wow.
And so I think that would have felt just like a statistic until then you've lived it. I understand why.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that insight you gave is profound. Like, we need to remember this. We actually love each other. This is not actually a marriage issue, although it's deeply affecting
our marriage. It's deeply affecting our marriage.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's so huge. Yeah. So maybe just to give some perspective or hope, what are some of the things that you found? You're sitting together, your arms around each other. You know, what are some of those things that you guys have been able to learn through that fiery space, or whether, you know, and maybe it's practical and maybe it's perspective, like you're saying, like, hey, this isn't about us right now, but any of those types of things I'd love for you guys to speak to.
I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is just allowing each other to process uniquely different from myself. Like he processed very differently than me, and I can't expect him to understand my sadness when his response is mad. So my response is always to be really sad and broken, and his is to be angry. And I have to give him enough space to be angry about something without me judging his anger. And he has to allow me to have space to be sad without judging my sadness. So we have to give space for each of us to grieve and be broken the way we are. We can't control his brokenness. I can't control his anger. though I want to. I want to be like, hey, you're being mean. That's not cool.
Yeah.
You know, and we definitely had arguments and fights and knockdown, drag out, like, we got to deal with this. Mm-hmm. But then we had to communicate, and communication, like coming back together and being really brutally honest sometimes is key. Like, I am hurt by you, or I'm hurt by the situation, mm-hmm. you know, and just talking mm-hmm. it out. I think yeah. we had huge, huge amounts of conversations.
Yeah. You mentioned Saturday mornings. Tell me about Saturday. What did Saturday mornings become for you guys?
Yeah.
We love Saturdays.
We still love Saturdays. Yeah. It's yeah. become a routine, and we actually really love it.
We start our day slow. We have coffee. We just hang out together, and we just talk about stuff that we need to talk about. And I mean, in those days, it was a moment where I'm not at work. I'm home. I'm leaving the room, Mateo's room. I'm hanging with Abby. Our kids are doing their own thing, and we can just be together for a minute. Not a minute, a couple hours, and mm-hmm. chill and like mm-hmm. talk and be honest and like struggle through it together.
Yeah.
And then and have a long couple cups of coffee and then like take a walk.
Yeah. It's that no TV, medicine. It's no phone. Yeah. It's just Tano and I connecting. Yeah. It just seems to be the best time for us as a couple to, I mean, some people do it on date nights. Some people do it whenever they do it. Saturday mornings, all of our kids are old now, so they sleep in. They were even old then, so they sleep in. And so we have quiet space.
Well, half of your kids are adults. So.
They are now.
No. Yeah.
They are now.
Yeah.
Yep, totally.
And even your youngest, I mean, what, Mateo's 16 and Havana's 13. Yeah, so you guys are in such a different world.
We're in a different world now. But even in the midst of everything, just having those moments.
Yeah, that was helpful. And like I said before, I mean, just her, how she framed, you know, the reality of the chaos. Like, truth is really helpful, you know. I remember there was a time where things were at their worst, and there was so much tension in our home and in our relationship because of all that was happening in our life. And, you know, I was, like, at my wit's end, man. And I remember I used to write a lot of songs. I like to write songs. And I wrote this song just because it's like kind of how I process, I guess. Sometimes it's a song. Sometimes it's just words or whatever. Whether God's telling me something or I'm meditating on something or whatever. But I remember very specifically a really tough moment with my wife and I where, like, I took a super long walk. And, like, I didn't want to go back to my house because it was so hard with Mateo. I didn't feel like I had a spot. I didn't feel like I had a home or a bedroom or a bed. And my wife and I we were at each other's throats. And I was just like, I got to get out of here right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember God speaking to me this song. And it was like, don't be a fool with what you do or say. It takes a lifetime to build. You tear it down in a day. And I will never forget that because that is so true for every man and woman that has a spouse and is going through intense pressure, because you think it might be easier to just leave and find some peace somewhere. And that is the absolute worst thing you can do.
Yes.
Because it really does. Like, marriage is the long game.
Mm-hmm.
This is the long game. Faith is the long game. Yeah. These aren't sprints.
Yeah.
We don't like rejoice over like a time, you know, you don't like arrive and then you check in and you check out and it's like, good job. No, there's certain things in life that are marathons. Marriage is one. Mm-hmm. Suffering is one. Mm-hmm. I remember God spoke to me and he said, there are no shortcuts to long suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody wants to bear the fruits of the Spirit. And that's the one that we don't want in our life.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
We just want to be loving. We want to be peaceful, kind, good. Mm. But long suffering, man, we don't want that one.
No.
Nobody's praying, God, give me some more opportunities to suffer. Yeah.
And that you're right. That really spoke to me because I love my wife with all I am and my kids. And even though my life, our life, our reality in that moment was hell, dude.
Mm-hmm.
It was still worth it, 100% worth it. And so that's my nugget to take away from this for anybody, any man out there that is thinking, you know, our kid has these special needs, or, you know, they're grieving the loss of something or someone, and there's no like connection point, and it'd just be easier to start over. Mm. Don't do it. Mm. Don't move. Mm. Because it does take a lifetime to build, but you can like, it takes so long to build a beautiful building, but you could blow it up in a second.
Mm. Yeah.
And all it takes is making a stupid choice, saying things or doing things that you'll wish you had never done because you're being an idiot because of the attention of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you have, it'd be nice to link, we'll link that song in our show notes, or at least that you recorded that one. I've heard that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd you be know great. Where yep. we've heard it is because when we were walking through the same diagnosis with our son, you sent it to us.
Oh, wow.
Oh yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah. Mm. I remember that.
Yeah.
So it'd be good for you guys to listen. It'd be good for those hearing this to actually listen to the heart of that. Yeah, sure. We could talk all day, literally.
I know we could.
Literally, we could. You guys have deposited a huge gift into this community, into Elizabeth and I. Mm-hmm. Your depths of understanding and wisdom and following Jesus and your story is beautiful. I think one of the most interesting things to highlight is that you're still in it. You know, yeah. it's not all, there's not like a nice little bow to wrap on this one. Mm-hmm. Right. Eliana's still not here. Mateo still has room for improvement in his thriving, you know, but he's doing so much better. And there's so many wins to all the things that you're sharing, even with your family, but it's also still really hard. And so I guess I just want to say thank you for not giving us the curated version and the, everything's all good and things are fine. And I think there's some that suffer deeply. I think God's just so proud of you guys. Mm-hmm. I really do. And you guys have been such an example. You're an example to Elizabeth and I and many others along the road of what it looks like to suffer long and be faithful and still be faithful to each other, but also to Jesus. Like, man, of all things, the fact that you still are like, yeah, we claim to be on the side of Jesus. Like, that's... It's amazing. That's
well, Jesus amazing. Is amazing, dude.
Yeah.
And he loves us. Yeah. And he knows what it's like to suffer.
Yeah.
That's the thing about God, is like, it's not just a matter of thinking the right things or feeling the right things or even believing the right things. All of those things are true and necessary. But what is important is trusting yourself to a God who not only understands suffering. This is why I feel like it's okay, because God is willing to suffer on our behalf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not only did he suffer by giving and losing, choosing to lose his child, or in Jesus's stance, you know, giving his own life. This is a God that chooses to suffer. Mm-hmm. He chooses to suffer. Mm-hmm. Who does that?
Yeah.
Who wants that?
Yeah.
And God could be anything that he wants. Like, if God wanted to be cruel and selfish, if God wanted to be mean and horrible, like, nobody's going to stop him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he chooses kindness to us. Yeah. He chooses his presence. He chooses suffering. And that's super relatable. So, like, I used to think I deserve some sort of trophy because of how much we suffer. That's a lie. That's a total selfish,
yeah,
silly human mentality.
Yeah.
I don't deserve anything because of my suffering.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
God is kind still.
Yeah.
And there's certain things that I'll never get and figure out, but I know he's good. And I know he relates willingly.
Yes.
You know?
Willingly.
Yeah. And I also want to give props to my wife, because she is a gracious, wise woman.
Yes, she is.
And I'm lucky to have her in my life.
Yeah.
I think that as you go through suffering, we all know that it's not the suffering itself that changes you. It's the things that it creates inside of you.
Yeah.
Like, it changes who you are. It changes the way you react. It changes the way you see the world and other people.
Yeah.
And it can become sweeter, you know, as you've gone through the suffering, you've endured it. It's not that it's gone and it will always be gone. It's that I've created habits and routines and how to endure suffering better than I used to. And our marriage has gotten sweeter through the trials and the hardships and the battles. And now I feel like there's, I mean, I would never want to do anything without Tano. I would never want to go through another struggle without him. So it just can become sweeter if you allow it to, because most people don't choose that.
Let patience have its perfect work in you, right?
Doesn't
the scripture say something like that? Yes. What's it say?
It says exactly that.
Yeah. So let patience have its perfect work in you.
And it will produce...
Isn't it so that your joy may be complete? Is that the same? Or am I putting two different scriptures together?
Sounds good.
Joy may be full. Yeah. That's the right verse. Gaetano, Abby, thank you for depositing. Thank you for sharing. This has been a gift, and I hope to have another conversation soon of updates. But thank you for giving so many people hope, giving myself hope. I mean, if this is for no one else listening, it's for Elizabeth and I. So so thank you for depositing that hope, and thankful that you were able, just willing and open to not just hold this all in. It'd be easier to not talk about this. It'd be easier to, I mean, it takes a lot of emotional energy to walk through back the hardest moments of your life and then to share that. Thank you for just trusting us and also just being willing to share. So I know it's a huge gift, and it's been an honor to have you guys on the show. So thank you for having us.
Thanks, you guys.
Yes, absolutely.
Can I give one more shameless plug for Abby?
Please.
So motherhood retreat.
Oh, yes. I was trying to figure out where to mention this. This is a perfect place to mention it.
So Abby is a masterful designer, event planner. You have this beautiful blend of gifts of being incredibly creative while also highly administrative,
being a
which
boss.
Makes you a powerhouse of a woman. Yes. I think if anybody who was at the motherhood retreat last year had any idea how small the team was that pulled off all the beauty and the food.
That was all Abby and her team.
That was run by Abby and Christina. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you come Abby's to any of our events, Abby will, most of the time Abby's behind it.
Yes. We put Abby and Christina together and they made this amazing dynamic duo.
Yeah.
You are incredibly gifted. You are making this next year's motherhood retreat an even more incredible experience. And you have such a heart for making an experience for the women so that they walk in and they feel seen and they feel loved from all the little details. So thank you for what you do. And anybody who's listening, if you would like to meet Abby, come to the motherhood retreat.
I was actually gonna say if you're at the motherhood retreat, thank you for that.
Man, it's an honor to work for you guys. I absolutely love my job, and I would not want to be doing anything else. I feel like it's just a good fit.
Well, good, because we're never letting you go.
and if anybody does leave, it's going to be socially and relationally awkward because we all are related. So no, but
we know where you live.
Yeah. But again, you guys, we love you. Thank you. So appreciate it.
We love you guys.
Thanks for hearing us. And thanks for having us.